Welcome to With Wael, the Ultimate Show.
Here is our coverage from the ATB Entrepreneurship Center in Calgary. Today, there will be a coverage on the status of the economy and how the economist of ATB is looking at the economy coming in 2017. This particular event happened on December 9th, 2016. Here you go.
You are now listening to With Wael, the Ultimate Show.
The economy, it's a big topic on everyone's mind right now in Alberta. There's no question, having sort of struggled through 2 years of recession, that the question that's on everyone's mind is what comes next for Alberta in 2017. And really the question, are things going to improve or are they going to turn around? And the answer to that, as I always say, in a way only an economist could, it's a bit complicated. when we think of what, I guess, triggered the recession for Alberta, there was only really one economic change, and that was the drop in oil prices, going from $107 a barrel down to $27 a barrel at the beginning of this year, and then having recovered modestly, but certainly struggling to, you know, get above 50 or stay above 50. So it's a challenging price environment for producers in the province, and that has been the whole reason, in fact, why Alberta has been funding these two consecutive years now of contraction, the drop in oil price. And I think it's a stark reminder how dependent this province still is on one single commodity. And we'll talk a little bit about, do we need to diversify or how does that happen in a little bit. But of course we remain very dependent on the petroleum sector and maybe crude oil particularly. So 2015, 2016, two consecutive years of contraction in Alberta's economy. You do have to go all the way back to the 1980s to find a situation that is as severe as this. In almost every respect, the way you would look at the data, the 1980s were worse, in fact, than what we're seeing now. And I don't think we will, in fact, get to a situation where it's as bad as the 1980s. But for a lot of people, if you're without work right now, or your kids are without work, or you're watching your friends lose their jobs, absolutely it feels as bad as the 1980s, even though statistically it may not be. But when it comes to the job market and the labor market, that is where people actually connect with what a recession means for them personally. So I guess there's two questions. Have we reached the bottom in the energy sector, and have we reached the bottom in Alberta's economy? For the first question, or for the answer to that first question, I would say that the worst of the price downturn, we believe, is behind us. So we don't think we're going to test oil at $27 or $30, the U.S. benchmark price again. Not in this cycle, anyway. I mean, that, who knows in the future. But we do think that these oil prices are likely to remain in this $45, maybe to $55 range. That said, we have to recognize anything is possible. Anything could happen. 2 years ago, I would not have said it was likely that oil was going to go to $30 a barrel. But it did. So we have to always keep in mind that, you know, anything could happen. A year from now, or even by 6 months from now, we could see oil at $30. We could see it at $80. I don't think those scenarios are very likely. Instead, our analysis suggests that we're going to see these prices continue to trend between about $45 and maybe $55 a barrel. And in our thinking, and I'm not an energy economist, so it's not my area of expertise. I collect my information from other smart people around me. But in our estimation, OPEC does not become as important a factor going forward as the U.S. shale oil does for Alberta. So OPEC, if they decided once again that they want to flood the market with oil, they could push prices back lower. Hasn't worked out really great for them, and in fact, I think that's one of the reasons why OPEC has decided to agree to limit some supply, because they too suffer with $30 oil. But going forward, I think the more limiting or the more important factor is the U.S. shale oil production. And that doesn't change. I mean, OPEC, it's a bit unpredictable, and depending on who's giving a speech on any given day, agreements come and agreements go with OPEC. But what doesn't change is that U.S. shale oil production. And that, in fact, is what we think will limit oil prices on the upside. And that's why they'll struggle anytime they get above $50, $55. A lot of that shale oil comes on the market. So we think that's the environment we're going to be looking at here for at least the next few years in Alberta, is probably a cap of oil prices at around that $50 or $55 range, kind of where they're at right now. So that's, I guess, good news and bad news. The good news is $50 oil is better than $27 oil. The bad news is $50 oil for a lot of producers in this province, that's still a challenging price. Now we're starting to see some green shoots, we're starting to see some optimism come back very gradually into the energy sector. We saw Cenovus's announcements yesterday, some positive signs that they're going to resume some bits of their investment in their projects, and that's positive. But going forward, I don't think we can count on the energy sector in this province to be that really super strong driving force in growth. And that's what we all sort of got used to between 2010 and 2014, when this province was growing at 4 or 4.5% real GDP every year. And that's because this the energy sector and the piles of investment in oil sand projects and conventional projects, that's what was driving all of the activity. Going forward with oil maybe more permanently at around 45 to 55, I think we can, I don't think we can expect the energy sector to be that strong driving force. It'll still be there, it'll still operate. The better equipped or the better positioned companies will operate profitably, but we're not gonna see a lot of investment come back. We're not gonna see a lot of employment come back. And that is, in fact, what's going to sort of hold growth back in Alberta in 2017. So in other words, we're expecting the energy sector, the petroleum sector in 2017, to stabilize with oil around $50. Stable is better than 2 years of contraction, but it doesn't yet bring back growth. And that's what a lot of people in this province are going to be waiting and watching for, is when does employment start to come back in the energy sector? So that's the first question. Have we reached the bottom in the petroleum sector? I think we've seen the very worst of it. Stable will be the new word for 2017, and maybe with some modest growth in 2018 and beyond. However, when we look at Alberta's macroeconomy and when we look at the labor market particularly, here's where I don't think we have quite reached the bottom yet. And this is the part of the chat that I don't like talking about, because it is around the job market where people do become very emotionally invested in what's going on. Because obviously people are concerned about jobs for themselves, opportunities again for their kids or their neighbors. Now at present we're sitting at 9% unemployment in Alberta, 10.3% in this city. That is the highest since the early 1990s, and Calgary now has the dubious honor of the highest unemployment rate of any major Canadian city. This is not a spot we're used to being in, and certainly not one we like being in, but the reality is there are tens of thousands of people right now without jobs. And if you pile on top of that, the people who are technically employed, but they're maybe employed part-time, they're maybe employed doing some contract work, it's not permanent, it's not full-time. When you pile on top of that, people who are perhaps underemployed, they'd like to be working more hours or at better pay. Then, of course, it's not just 10.3%. It's probably closer to 20% of Calgarians are either without work altogether or they're struggling being underemployed. So when you start to think about that, I mean, that's a fifth of Calgarians, and it's no wonder that the mood in the city in 2016 has been quite dark, and in some cases kind of an angry mood. But I think we are reaching, I don't think we've quite reached the very worst of it yet with the labor market. I do think the unemployment rate is going to climb a little bit higher into early 2017. The way these economic cycles work, when oil prices started to turn downward, it wasn't until about 8 months, in fact, that Calgary's unemployment rate started to rise. There was a lag going into the recession. Coming out of the recession in 2017, and by the way, our expectation of coming out is very, very modest growth. But coming out of the recession in 2017, we think the labor market will also lag. In other words, we're likely to see it climb a bit higher, before it stabilizes, perhaps somewhere around 9.5% or 10% for Alberta, and then gradually start to improve after that. So we've seen the worst of it, we think, in the energy sector, but for Alberta's macroeconomy and for the labor market, we think we have a few more months of tough sledding here before things stabilize and start to improve. Before I stop talking, there are some sectors in the province, pardon me, there are some sectors in the province that continue to do quite well, and we think that this is where the modest growth is going to come from in 2017. It's not going to come from the petroleum sector, but we do think we will see some continued growth in sectors like agriculture and agri-foods. Forestry, although that one comes with a caveat, which I'll talk about, and tourism, which is probably set for another record year in 2017. Now we have to understand forestry, agriculture, tourism, these are the second, third, and fourth largest industries, but even taken as a group, they are dwarfed by the petroleum industry. I mean, it's not even close how far they trail behind. Nonetheless, they do provide some balance and some diversity, and those are the sectors that are growing right now. Now, the caveat with the forestry sector, and forestry much more important for communities in sort of the west and northern Alberta, but the caveat there is the softwood lumber agreement with the United States has expired. There's no agreement in place. It expired over a year ago. And now with the new administration coming into the White House, you may have heard there was an election about a month ago and some interesting changes on the way. But it's anyone's guess, in fact, how that softwood lumber agreement is going to be negotiated. But I would suggest that on balance, it's probably bad news for the forestry sector and not fantastic news. Of course, with Mr. Trump being more isolationist. Yeah, question?
How big is the forestry sector in Alberta?
In dollar terms, I don't know. That's a good question. And it's not large, especially, again, compared to the petroleum sector. It's minuscule, in fact.
It's more of a BC.
It's much more BC. But there are communities, like Grand Prairie, Peace River, Rocky Mountain House. There's a swath of communities along the western and northern fringe where it is an important driver. So I wouldn't consider it, you know, a large industry, but it is one of those base resource industries. And it's one of the industries, by the way, that tends to do better when oil prices are weak, because the forestry sector competes for labor almost directly with a lot of those oil and gas providers or producers. So it's not huge, but it is still a base industry that does help provide some diversity. Yeah.
So how do you see the new TB outbreak in Alberta impacting the agriculture sector? Because we are one of the major producers for cows or meat, or processed meat. And right now they have this warning and this order.
So are you talking about the bovine tuberculosis?
Yes.
Yeah. This isn't good news at all. I wouldn't say at present it's not a catastrophe, because it's still contained. But we don't know. I mean, it's already spread more than to one ranch. And I think the last count is 10,000 head have to be put down. So that's not good news at all. We'll have to watch the story to see how it evolves. If it does turn into a bigger issue, and if it eventually leads to perhaps a closure or a ban of exports, it's not at that point yet, but it's not to say it couldn't get there. So we'll have to watch it very closely. It's not good news for the cattle industry. It's just one more thing. When I think about the better news in agriculture, so we think about traditional agriculture is cattle, wheat, canola. Those are the three kind of. Cattle prices, wheat prices, they're kind of weak right now. Canola, it's kind of okay. Wasn't a fantastic crop year in Alberta, depending on where you are. Especially around Edmonton and central Alberta, it was too wet. They had a hard time getting their crops off. Better conditions in southern Alberta. It's always kind of uneven for farmers that way. But where I'm more optimistic these days is in the opportunities around small niche agri-food producers. They've actually been doing really, really well. And I think they're sort of capitalizing on a trend around more growing consumer demand for locally produced foods, in some cases organic foods, in all cases smaller niche production. Where there's better information about the food. In other words, trends consumer trends around food are moving away from highly processed, manufactured foods that come out of big factories in Mississauga. And they're moving more towards the niche, locally produced players. And I think Alberta is capitalizing on that. Now, we have to, you know, keep in mind, it's still very, very small, and organic honey production, in fact, the owl this morning was about honey production. It's increased sevenfold in 30 years in Alberta. Yeah. And we're exporting it. So, but, you know, $70 million in honey does not start to replace, you know, crude oil as the driver in this economy. But it starts to help when you start to see, you know, thousands of agri-food producers, all niche players, all at a local, small level. But it does start to provide more of that diversity of income and industrial mix in the province. So just to wrap up, and then I'll stop talking and turn it over to you. Our forecast, our most recent forecast came out November 2nd, and we're now calling for a real GDP growth of 2.1% in 2017. About 0.5% of that comes from the rebuild in Fort McMurray, which is not the best kind of GDP that you would like to see, because we're really just rebuilding to get to where we were. But nonetheless, that will provide, or that will involve some spending and some boost to the GDP in 2017. And the other 1.5% comes from those other sectors that I talked about, agri-foods, tourism, perhaps some forestry. None of that growth, or the energy sector does not yet make any contribution to GDP growth in 2017, but on the bright side, it no longer acts as a drag, pushing Alberta into contraction. So 2.1%, that is, I guess, good news. We think that technically the recession will end next year. But again, with that elevated unemployment rate, for a lot of people, the fact that the economy is now growing again will be cold comfort. It will still feel pretty recessionary with an unemployment rate around 9 or higher percent. So with that, I'll turn it over to you if you have questions or observations of your own. Yes?
In terms of percentage contribution, the provincial GDP, so to speak, what's the oil and gas industry? Is it 70%?
Well, it depends on the year. Prior to the oil price downturn, was it about 25%? So I don't actually know what it is going to be in 2016. I mean, we're still in 2016, but my guess is it'll be somewhere closer to about 10 or 12%. That's only a guess, like roughly half of where it was.
And that's direct, not indirect?
Direct, correct. So all the other things, like the construction industry, manufacturing, which in Alberta is largely refining of energy products, that's all kind of separate. So that 25% 2 years ago, maybe 10 or 12% now, that is just oil and gas production and sale.
In the US, the spin-off sector, I used to remember back from the 90s, was from 1 to 20, as high as 1 to 20 for each upstream job.
Yeah.
20, you know, downstream and distribution jobs associated with oil and gas.
I actually don't know what that is. Probably some estimates have been made. But, you know, you don't have to... It's hard to find anyone in this province who is not directly or at least one degree of separation away from the energy sector. You know, even financial services, you know, like ATB, we're affected by, you know, the energy sector. We have a lot of clients who are energy sector providers. And in business services, all of those drilling contractors and water haulers, they're all considered as business services when Stats Canada calculates the GDP. But they are business services that feed directly into the energy sector. So they're really an extension of it. So once you start to count all of that, even the restaurants downtown Calgary, you know, they're full of oil and gas at lunch and during cocktail hour. So in that respect, those particular restaurants are really kind of part of the industry too.
You didn't talk about Calgary's construction industry. I mean, we're finishing off the last towers. Are we looking at 10 years of no cranes in Calgary?
10 years might be a bit gloomy, but yeah, probably several years. You know, and I always caution people not to get too worked up about this is a typical pattern. I moved to Calgary in 1989, and at that time Calgary had just gone through another building boom, and they were all sitting empty. You know, and this happens, you know, 6 years, the vacancy rate is high. Actually, I happened to work for a not-for-profit at the time in the early 1990s, and we had fantastic, I worked with Rob, we had fantastic office space in what was Canterra Tower at the time. I mean, this is way too nice. It was a brand new building. Way too nice a space for a scrappy little not-for-profit like we were. But it was donated office space, and we just had to pay the heat and the lights. And it was a charitable donation for whoever held the lease on that. So, you know, you see this happen time and time again. This time around, yeah, 25% vacancy rate in those towers, it's going to go higher. It's more severe than other downturns, but this is the normal cycle. What it will do is it'll push down the rates or the rents on that space, which 3 years ago, I mean, companies from outside of oil and gas, they wouldn't have looked at Calgary because office space was too expensive. Well, now it's all on sale, and they can get some really nice space. So that helps, you know, promote more diversity that way. But it is going to be rough for the leaseholders on that space, for sure.
Yeah. So you mentioned that the tourism had been flipped over and doing good. Mm-hmm. And we know the oil show here was really not good. And there are so many cuts everywhere for people attending. So can you just explain how do you see this? Because this is maybe an example for anybody of us who try to figure out where else to go. So what are the current sources for this particular tourism? How they can flip away from the oil shows? Because we used to be the largest province for oil and gas shows, and this is how we made our tourism industry.
Yeah,
it was not the standard tourism industry.
So how we move?
How they moved, like what sources they get, like from where they were able to get other customers.
Like other kinds of trade shows or other sorts of tourism or, well, that's a good question. I don't know. I'd have to maybe refer to someone in the travel and tourism industry, the ones who actually work on trying to advertise Calgary and, you know, lure these big groups. I do know that Rotary International is, Calgary is now exploring making another bid to have Rotary come. Their last international one in Calgary was, I think, in the 90s, and it was the single largest event of tourism for Calgary ever, still unmatched by anything else. So they're looking at another bid sometime in, I think, in 2020 or beyond. So there's things like that, but yeah, outside of the energy sector, if you're looking at different industries, I don't know exactly how a tourism, you know, Calgary conventions and tourism and conventions, how they would go about doing that, but there are other opportunities. Yeah.
What do you think about the Canadian dollar?
The Canadian dollar, well, it has been moving sort of lockstep with oil prices to some degree, but the bigger influence, I think, on the Canadian dollar will be any surprise moves by the U.S. Federal Reserve. Now, they're largely expected to raise rates next week, I think it is. Raise their interest rates in the United States, or a surprise move, or even a statement by the Bank of Canada, which is not expected to raise rates for a long, long time to come.
Right.
And that's why the Canadian dollar is, you know, lower than its traditional value of about 82 or 83 cents. So right now it's lower than that, because the markets are all anticipating that rates in the States are going to go up, and they're not going to go up in Canada.
So you think that's already factored in?
Yes. Yeah. So if there was a surprise move, or even, you know, say the Bank of Canada loses all sense and tomorrow it makes a speech saying we're going to raise rates in January,
right,
and catching markets, you know, off guard, they're not going to do that, by the way. But if they did do that, well, that would, you know, really drive the Canadian dollar up suddenly.
What do you think about
that? Or if there was another really dramatic change in oil prices, or maybe some of those other prices like gold, but... one more and then...
Yeah, okay. I was just going to ask about real estate, Edmonton versus Calgary, and what you think about values, because we're still fairly low compared to Vancouver, Toronto, but now we have this other issue, so...
Yeah.
What's your...
The other issue being...
Well, everything's, like, gone to hell in a handbasket.
Oh, okay. Like the recession being the other issue.
Yes.
Yeah. So we're talking residential real estate,
yes,
not... office or commercial.
Right, residential.
You know, actually, I mean, we're 2 years into a recession and real estate prices, housing prices have been remarkably stable. I would not have expected them, in fact, to be as stable as they are. Certain segments of the market, especially here in Calgary, the condo market is down and the $10 million properties are down. But that's because they have there's a thinner market for those buyers anyway, and they build too many condos. But even those, I mean, condo prices in downtown Calgary, they're off about, you know, 5 or 10%. But those single detached, you know, bungalows, that kind of mid-range, they haven't even really moved much at all. They're down maybe about 2 or 3%. In Edmonton, they're not even down at all. So Edmonton is not getting hit as bad as Calgary is in this downturn. And I think it's because going into the recession, both cities' real estate markets were very healthy and balanced. It's not like we were going into a recession with a bubble already built in. And that would have been the case back in 2006, 2007, I think. And then you did see housing prices in that last recession. So coming out of it, I don't see a lot of growth in housing prices in 2017. But, you know, you could also imagine a situation where it becomes clear to everybody that, okay, the downturn in the energy sector is behind us. Oil prices are back above 50. We have some pipelines in place. The green shoots of optimism start coming back. And then you could start to see that spillover effect, what's driven Vancouver's real estate, which is foreign buyers. You know, then you could start to see them sniffing up. Toronto's already experienced this. And, you know, Calgary's only an hour flight from Vancouver. So you could start to see some increase in real estate buying because of that influence. But I think it'll be a while yet before Calgarians are starting to feel comfortable enough to start bidding up on houses because that unemployment rate's going to remain higher.
I'm waiting for them to go lower. Is that a possibility?
It's a possibility. It's a possibility, sure. Yeah, I mean, we could see, you know, lower prices in the first quarter of next year, which is traditionally a lower buying season or buying time anyway. So yeah, depending on the exact property that you're looking at, it's possible, for sure.
All right.
But I wouldn't see, you know, I wouldn't see another 5% drop or... not as likely. Yeah.
Yeah, you stated that you think that the oil prices are going to be pretty range bound, pretty low bottom. What elements of your analysis indicates that? Like, is it, like, you're looking at CapEx and OpEx or budget planning from the companies? Or?
Well, I guess when we think about that oil price, I'm referencing that U.S. dollar West Texas Intermediate benchmark price as one of the global prices. You know, there's Brent prices for Europe and Asia, but that WTI price, mostly influenced by, well, two basic things, supply and demand. We think demand will continue to grow modestly. I mean, global conditions are looking slightly better than they were a year ago, especially in the United States. Now with the new Trump administration coming in, cuts to taxes, spending on infrastructure, that's expected to have a stimulative effect on the U.S. economy, probably energy consumption. So we think demand is going to be at least a modest positive for price. But then the other bigger issue has been supply, and that's where, I mean, over the last 3 years, we've seen supply really come onto the market, and that's what's driven price down. So supply, then again, it gets back to those two things. OPEC, what's OPEC going to do? Is OPEC really going to agree to these supply limits? Are they really going to hang together? Is Mr. Putin and Russia going to cooperate? Sounds like, I mean, from their most recent talks, it sounds like, yeah, they're going to agree to withhold some supply, and that's positive for price. But we don't know with OPEC precisely. I mean, like I said earlier, they could meet tomorrow and decide, no, we're scrapping that whole agreement, and, you know, oil prices could fall back down with more supply. But probably the single biggest factor right now for that cap on oil prices, in our estimation, is the U.S. shale oils. Because under no scenario does that go away, right? It's a technological advance, and there's a lot of oil in the United States. They keep finding more oil, a big discovery in Texas. But haven't you just explored all of Texas already? I mean, now you're finding this, but it's because of new the new shale technologies that they're that they're now able to extract new reserves. So those are the two big things.
Yeah, I agree with what you're stating. You know, I've got about 30 years in the oil industry, both in Canada, U.S., and international. I come from more of a downstream background, refining and upstream, but I have experience in upstream, up in the food chain, as well as distribution pipelines. And as of last quarter, data always comes in late. It's old news. But the U.S. is now the number one proven reserve for crude oil in the world. And that shale crude is actually really good crude. It's sweet. It's a light crude, which is great for for refining, easier to refine. Whereas our syn crude, it's crappy crude. There's a lot of mercaptans, which are sulfur bearing, has a lot of olefins and other contaminants, which make it more difficult to process and process it. Demand products like gasoline, that's a big problem. And OPEC is basically a non-issue except as a catalyst for speculation in the oil futures market. Because you got the U.S. now as the big dog, then Russia, then OPEC. And then J.P. Morgan right now is going to, they're underwriting, I believe, the IPO for Saudi Aramco. You know, this is Saudi Arabia's biggest oil company. The Arabs know what's coming, so they're getting out of there and trying to pull money. Hopefully they don't have another long-term, if you're familiar with market crashes, they have another long-term capital crisis where they, a bunch of idiots, make a ton of trillions of dollars and blow it. But they're going to take that IPO money and diversify into the industries. Because, you know, the only way that Saudi, the House of Saud keeps the rest of the country in line is they give free handouts. They just, they're running out of cash for it. And Russia, too, I believe that. You know, they got to keep pumping because that's their main cash flow. They've got Europe as hostage as their main gas supply, as well as one of their primary supplies as well. I don't think they're going to stop pumping.
Well,
so it, you know, I don't mean to be pessimistic, but I think as Albertans, we have to really look at going somewhere else. While we've
absolutely
got the chance and
yeah
cash flow,
yeah,
even though it hurts, we need to diversify it elsewhere. Because look at what happened to the pulp and paper industry on the coast, the forestry, the fishing
yeah
industry.
Well, and you're absolutely right, and this question of diversity comes up all the time. But the question that's never answered, and you said the word, we need to diversify. Well, who's we? And this is where the problem is, because do we mean, who is we? Is it the provincial government? Is it the energy sector itself? Is it the Chamber of Commerce? It's hard to say. If there's a profit motivation to do it, business will diversify. If there's not that profit motivation, how do we, that pronoun again, how do we make this happen? And this is the nut that we've been trying to crack for 40 years in this problem.
And I think it's only personal opinion, but if you look at history, it has to be the government. I don't want to think about the welfare mentality, but the government is really the only power that has the way of redistributing wealth or to initiate redirection of cash flow or liquidity. Companies ain't going to do it. Companies are always looking, okay, you know, no one's so stupid as to take $1 billion and take a shot at something unless they've got some assurances that they're going to make some money or they get a tax break. Look at what happened up in Alaska. I did some work up to Pluto Bay and on the Valdez pipeline. The only way a lot of those projects got going was the state of Alaska and also the federal government gave them tax breaks, and they were able to write off a lot of screwed up projects. If they didn't have that safety, that there's no way that they would do those projects and maintain those businesses, because it's really unsustainable business. I'm not talking as a tree hugger, I'm talking as just pure business. So we have to do that. We as a, I guess, the Alberta government, as well as maybe some lobbying without sounding like a bunch of whining welfare checkers. through Europe many years ago, I was shocked that Sweden is like California, the EU, you know, the most advanced high-tech software comes out of Sweden. But like 30, 40 years ago, we used to make fun of those guys. It was Nam Schwen, the you know, goofy Swedish clerk, you know, on Sesame Street. Okay? And their GNP was based on forestry and fishing and agriculture.
Well, I don't want to cut you off, but I want to make sure other people get a chance to ask a question too. But lots of really good comments in there. Yes.
So I apologize for having made comments. You might have talked about it already, but you know, just to speak to that whole area around diversification in the oil industry, I mean, certainly at events that I've gone to over the last couple of months, whether they're startup events or sort of, you know, events here, what I find interesting is that I'm seeing more people. But when I speak to consultancy companies here in Calgary, there's more oil companies or more people from oil now who are at least interested in doing something a bit different. I mean, I've had conversations with people, Sunova and Suncor, who said, you know what, we've been through this like 8 times or 9 times, and there are finally some people at the senior level who are saying, you know what, maybe we need to change a little bit. And they are the slowest ever to change. I think we all know that, always want to be first, maybe second. But there is some motion. I think there's, you know, finally, oil companies are starting to look at the information that they hold. I started to think about how can they be efficient with it. In some ways, the fact that oil has been low for such a long time and probably will likely stay low is a good thing for diversity.
Probably.
Because unless you hit people where it hurts, they will not change. So I actually don't mind. I mean, I've never worked in the oil industry in Alberta. I've been here for about 11 years, and I've never needed to. And I think it's good that we haven't needed to.
And you can imagine a scenario, say for whatever reason. And you know, there might be some analysts who predict this. Oil goes back up to $80 or $90 a barrel. Well, all it would really do is start us on the cycle again,
exactly.
And any of the diversity that's starting to come up gets choked out very quickly.
There is new initiative. I mean, I know that there is more money that's going to be available from the federal government to go to entrepreneurial efforts. I know there's an event a couple of weeks ago talking about the sort of the innovation landscape, which concentrated a lot on. What is the funding that's available from the government, both at the provincial and the federal level, you know, to support new technology, to support new business. You know, there is money that's being pumped in there. That I think it's down to some individuals who might like to do things a little bit differently. You know, to be able to have, you know, to get sort of the word out more about the support for new business, or the support for diversification in the economy. I think there's some work that's been doing that, but there can always be more. Talking to people who are involved in the investment community, we don't attract enough private investment here, largely because we've not yet built the appropriate sort of landscape or the appropriate ecosystem that will attract people. Like, you've got to have, you know, more people, you've got to have more business, you've got to have them better. You know, it's all good, and the only way you're going to get that is really more competition, so you force people to make really good,
good comments.
Just a question on the band of oil traders you're seeing in the trade at the WTI. Do you see outside investment coming into those capital projects for lower cost producers like Cenovus and Suncor? They made that announcement that they're starting up with their own project. Do you see stuff from outside of the province or outside of Canada? Or does our corporate tax structure kind of deter that kind of thing?
Well, it's a good question, and I don't know if I'm the best to answer. I would find it hard to believe that there would be a huge inflow of outside capital coming in, simply because the amount of investment that they're going to be making is going to be quite small, at least compared to where it was 3 or 4 years ago, where we did see a lot of that capital coming in. So the gains, or the increases in capital spending are going to be pretty marginal. I think they'll come back in 2017, but I don't think it's going to need, in fact, a whole lot of outside capital pouring in. So, but other people in the industry might have more knowledge on that than I do.
Yeah, and when you talk about the tourism boom that we would see in 2017, is that based solely on what our Canadian dollar price is at right now?
Well, there's a lot of things actually working in favor right now of tourism in Canada and Alberta. One of them, of course, is the Canadian dollar. It's low. The other is the U.S. economy is doing well. They got 4.6% unemployment there. Not everyone in the U.S. is doing well, but by and large, their economy is kind of back on its feet, and that promotes tourism. Asian tourism, especially from China, I think there's a lot of scope for expanding there. We have that, forget the name of the airline from Beijing that has a nonstop to Calgary. And there's a lot of, you know, consumer dollars in China now. Not everyone. But I think more of them are going to be looking for those experiential kinds of travel. And I think Canada is well positioned for that. And then the other thing that's taken place in 2016, The Economist magazine, there was some travel website, and now National Geographic identified, National Geographic, we were on the front cover of their last edition, of the 20 best places in the world to visit in 2017. You can't buy publicity like that. I mean, this is National Geographic, and Banff was right on the front cover. So, I mean, all of that helps, for sure. The Canadian dollar is a big support in that, the lower Canadian dollar. But 2015, 2016, two consecutive years in a row of record tourism spending and tourism visits. And I think 2017 can easily surpass that again. And now with the new YYC terminal accommodating more international flights, I don't see why it wouldn't.
I guess Banff being free this year is not a bad
Banff thing. Is free. Not everything in Banff is
no,
free. I felt like going and ordering a really expensive meal. Wow, Justin Trudeau said it's free. But no, not everything. But yeah, that'll be another boost to every little bit helps. Yeah.
With the oil price, do you see that an opportunity for renewable energy, solar, wind? If so, how long do you think it will take before they get a stable footing in the economy so that they can grow that industry?
Great questions, and a lot of interest. Obviously, the provincial government has a lot of interest in promoting more renewables. In fact, we've got a mandate now to get ourselves off coal. So there is going to be a big push from the government, and I think industry will find opportunities. Wind and solar are the two that come up all the time, and I think there's lots of potential for wind and solar. But I'm also interested in what Alberta, what our bright minds in this province, where we can be some of the leaders in developing the technology. And I don't know, Elaine, you might have better thoughts on this tonight. Wind and solar, I mean, we are so far behind, I don't think we'd ever be a leader in developing new technologies around that.
That was several years ago when we were trying to get, that was my thesis, we were trying to get some investment in wind power development. There was a couple of investors that were trying to get some manufacturing facilities down at Ocean Creek, because the wind resource down there is about 10 to, depending on who you talk about, 100 times what it is in California. And part of why it went south there is because they put it in the wrong places. So I think if there is some open incentives for creating some manufacturing facilities, we have, TransAlta has acquired some of the ones that were early investors down in that area. We could get some new technologies there, and again, expand it, because we have, for solar, our angle information is right, depending where you have it. But again, there's a lot of small producers to put in on your house, and those kind of small transitions. So I think it really is, instead of focusing on large corporations, like all of those businesses there that are on that wall, I can see if they then implement small micro solars, small micro wind, and again, shift those expectations too, because I know there's some students coming out that want $100,000 a year, and I'm like, I used to work for $3 an hour. I'm not that old.
So I think there's lots of scope for wind and solar, and those are the two, you know, kind of poster children, I guess, for renewables. But I think there's also, for Alberta, where we could be perhaps a world leader in developing the new technologies, is in deeper geothermal. Because we're really good at digging through 2 kilometers of rock to get into something. And I think it would be a natural springboard from petroleum industry, already very well established in this province, the engineering prowess that already exists here. And there hasn't been, I mean, when you think about these new renewable technologies, wind and solar, there hasn't really been a lot of technological advances in deeper geothermal electricity. there's shallower geothermal heating and cooling of homes. The new YYC terminal is all geothermal cooled and heated, and that's great. But I'm interested in, you know, getting down so deep where you can spin a turbine and turn on lights. And that technology has not really been developed. And I think Alberta would be really well positioned to be the pioneer in that. And then the Germans and the Danes and the Chinese and everyone else would come to Alberta and say, sell us your technology because we need it too.
So do you see renewables, do you see this as a window for them to grow their industry? Much?
Yeah, I think so. But again, it's going to require oil prices staying put at where they're at, because, you know, a lot of these renewable energy companies, they struggled 3 years ago. You wouldn't have been able to hire people because they pay the ones, you know. Where if you have to pay people, you know, a 40% premium to attract them from the oil and gas sector, guess what? Now you don't have to do that. You can offer them just about anything. And, you know, I don't say that lightly, because people are recalibrating their expectations downward of what they're going to earn. But the point is, there's a lot of very available, talented, skilled people. Players in that renewable space are finding great opportunities, great office space. Just about all of the conditions right now are perfect for it, whereas they were terrible 3 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
So
you can't hire anybody, you can't afford it. There's no support, you know, oil and gas. You know,
yeah.
You're up the sidelines, right?
That's always been the struggle for technology companies here.
Yeah.
You just can't
almost
compete in price.
Yeah.
So you have, but we always competed with culture, really, more than anything else, is having, you know, a much more kind of open and hopefully fun environment. You know, getting people interested in doing something really new and exciting, rather than
just
going for the money, exactly.
Do you see a potential change in policies to help support that growth? And things like,
well,
especially when you're talking about small solar and wind development, the biggest hindrance to that right now is permits, especially in the city and the province, and getting those anything done. They're the most expensive here than they are anywhere else.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a great question. Lots of times, you know, governments can have great intentions, but when you start to realize, oh, but there's this barrier and this barrier and this municipal government bylaw and this thing over here, a lot of it runs, it gets quite frustrating. So I don't know enough about the whole system, but I can definitely see your point. That unless all of these policies are pulling in the same direction, we might be a bit frustrated in how far we don't get.
Tom, back to
want
to
wrap up?
The questions, and everyone, if you're invited to stay, grab a coffee, if you have any more questions. Todd is here, but also our economist from Edmonton is Arad. May 4th. Who I introduced earlier, but he wasn't here to put a face to the name. So he can also take your questions. Including forestry questions, these potatoes. These are residential, a number of things. But also, if you wanted to really talk about ATV.com/economics,
right? Oh, yeah.
Thank you for listening to With Wael, The Ultimate Show.